Welcome to the F3, Female Forward Finance. I'm your host, Jill Faraday Lloyd, a financial advisor at UBS Private Wealth, and I'm on a mission to help women have agency with their capital. The F3 is a space for real conversations about money, power, and everything in between. You'll hear from experts, entrepreneurs, and everyday Janes about the choices they're making when it comes to their wealth. These are critical conversations because women are earning, building, and shaping what comes next in the world, and it's time we own every bit of our power.
Welcome back to the F3. Today's episode is about the lessons you only learn by building, by putting things into the world, by failing forward, by getting knocked sideways, and still choosing to keep going. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Jody Newhauser, a four-time founder with a record of building and scaling venture-backed companies. She's raised more than $100 million. She scaled brands across 100 markets and generated over $1 billion in new business. She is the founder and CEO of In Women's Health, a community, education, and talent platform focused on women's health, training operators, clinicians, entrepreneurs, executives, and investors to accelerate care for women. She also co-founded the Women's Health Pact to demonstrate the collective financial and bipartisan political power of women to stand up for their own holistic health. And her latest venture, 51AND, is an AI-powered navigation layer for women's health, turning a fragmented ecosystem into personalized guidance, real savings, and collective political power. But the through line in her story isn't just success. It's what each chapter of her life has taught her. So welcome, Jody. I can't wait to walk through those chapters with you.
Thanks so much, Jill. It's such an honor to be here. And thank you for having us and for having me and for all of you, all the things you do to empower women, to empower women investors, and to help women align their economic capital with their value systems we need. This is so important, especially in women's health.
It's my joy, and it's such a pleasure to meet and get to know and become friends with women like you. So thanks, Jody. I want to do this like a chapter book because your career is so fascinating. So I'd really like, before we get to any of the later chapters, I'd really like to start at the beginning. Can you tell us about your first company, right? Where did that idea come from? Tell us the name. Tell us where the idea came. What were you seeing in the world that made you think, you know, this needs to exist?
Yeah, Jill. So I was, like many companies, especially in the women's health space, companies are founded usually based on a founder's own journey. And my first company in the space was no different. I was living in New York City in my kind of early to mid 30s, training for an Ironman, working in the data and hospitality space, interestingly enough. So nothing related to health or healthcare, but I was training every Saturday morning, and they always say you should work in what you do on a Saturday morning because that's actually most closely values aligned with who you are. And I started, you know, understanding or realizing that, hey, a lot of my friends were freezing their eggs. Maybe this is something that I should think about and look into. But unfortunately, I was working at a small, less than 50 employees company, and that didn't have fertility or egg preservation insurance. And so for me, paying out of pocket was just not going to, it wasn't going to work for me financially. And so this is the start of a number of different companies in this space, but it's truly the transition for me from a data and hospitality company into the women's health space. I was trying to manage my own healthcare, manage my own journey, figure out what all these things I was doing from a lifestyle perspective, how that was going to impact my fertility moving forward. No one had any answers, and I was the one that was having to connect all the dots. At the same time, I was going through this, my own journey of figuring out, do I want to freeze my eggs? What does that entail? What does that look like? How much does it cost to do it in the United States? And my sister is actually married to a South African who she met playing on the LPGA tour. And they were going to South Africa for Christmas one year. I had been for their wedding and fallen in love with Cape Town. And so I decided to just look into what it would cost to freeze my eggs in South Africa. And it turns out it's a third of the cost. So literally, Jill, the exact same vial of a fertility medication that's used in the United States and costs somewhere between $6,000 and $7,000 was $435 in South Africa.
Wow.
So huge opportunity. So I went through that process. I went to South Africa over Christmas one year, went through the egg freezing process with an amazing clinic there. The whole thing, all in medicine and everything, was less than $3,500. An egg freezing cost in the United States can go upwards of 10,000 depending on where you get it done. And usually you need multiple cycles of egg preservation for long-term fertility use. And then I came back and I also side note met my husband on that trip, but that's a conversation for a different path over a glass of wine probably, but it will be a lifetime Christmas movie one day because it happened at Christmas. It was as I was freezing my eggs and, you know, the world just puts the right thing in the right place at the right time for sure. I came back and all of my friends were like, how did you do it? Where did you go? You know, who did you use? How do I do this? How can I do the same thing? And like a good entrepreneur, I just productized it. And I said, okay, well, if all these people are asking me about this, then there's clearly a need here. So I started Renew Fertility Travel. And it was, we were working on how do we bring people to South Africa, to Cape Town, even though it's a 14 to 16 hour flight, give them an amazing luxury once in a lifetime vacation, connect them from a professional standpoint to whatever industry they're in so that they can understand more and learn more about the African continent from a professional standpoint, and travel with a group of like-minded individuals. And so that really was what Renew Fertility Travel was all about. We started with a group of female founders. We had 34 female founders ready to sign up to go and to come on our first trip. 2 weeks, freeze your eggs, and or maybe even go through an IVF cycle, meet with investors, meet with other entrepreneurs throughout the African continent, learn more about, you know, a bunch of different industries there. Unfortunately, the trip was scheduled in March of 2020.
Oh, COVID.
So COVID came. We obviously, you know, the world shut down in March of 2020, and there was not a lot of travel, or certainly not a lot of medical travel that was happening for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in there. And so, you know, while that, I will say that's a company where I failed forward and failed fast for sure. It was the first, you know, it was the first opportunity for me to go, okay, how do you think about a product? How do you think about a target audience? How do you think about monetization? How do you think about unit economics? How do you think about value creation and value delivery in a way that, you know, is beneficial for everyone involved? So that was, and that's, those are the core parts of starting any business.
Well, I love that you took those lessons and moved them into the next chapter. So your next company was Ovaterra, and there's an M&A and power struggle and founder identity story there that I'd like to pull out of you. So when you think back to building Ovaterra with co-founder, what surprised you the most about the dynamics that mattered long before any of the headlines?
Well, and I think the lesson, big lesson, one of the big lessons I took away from Ovaterra was just how important it is to build with values aligned folks and to have clarity from day one on what everyone wants to achieve with the business and how you're going to achieve that together with the business. And I think I jumped into the opportunity to build Ovaterra with my co-founder. I think one out of necessity, but also just out of it was an interesting opportunity in a venture-backed company to, you know, they had already secured some investment. They had a portfolio of IP that already existed, and they really needed a person to kind of a co-founder or a person to help them bring it to market and commercialize it and scale it. And I think instead of sort of stepping back, and I think this was also a part of what happened with COVID is, you know, at the time I was living in Cape Town, I was living in South Africa. And so, you know, I couldn't travel to go and have dinner with my co-founder and spend a lot of time with him. You know, we had to build our relationship early on, literally over Zoom. And I think, you know, that's something probably not a mistake I would make again. Hopefully we don't have another global pandemic, but the values alignment was really, really important. And if anything, I kind of jumped into it, I think, a little too early without clarity on exactly what we were looking to achieve.
Yeah, but you learned a lot, right? You went through an
M&A
process. What can you tell us about that and what you took away?
Yeah. And, you know, I think we actually also went through a right-sizing, a potential right-sizing of the cap table. So, you know, when we went back out to raise an additional round of capital with a new vision for the portfolio of IP over top of a tech layer that we were building. Essentially, you know, this was almost 10 years ago, looking to build the Amazon of women's health. We were probably a little bit early for what we were doing. And we realized instead of one of the lessons I took away is, you know, don't go into an existing cap table. Make sure that you're starting clean from scratch. Because a cap table was already existed in kind of the company setup as I went into it. And that came back to really hurt us as we went out to raise capital, because our cap structure on our cap table, just, it didn't fit with additional, you know, with having to raise additional capital. And my co-founder didn't want to right-size the cap table. He was unwilling to give up some of his equity in order to get the cap table into a position that was attractive to the next round of venture investors. So we weren't able to raise additional capital because of the cap table structure. And then that's when we had been getting offers, M&A offers, really all the whole way through, and just kind of ignoring them, frankly. And then finally, we opened up the conversation with a couple of them, a couple of different people, ended up with a pretty strong offer, and, you know, and others to kind of, and other benchmarks to compare it to. Our first IP was starting to expire in 4 years. Our first patent was expiring in 4 years. And so to me, it felt like a really good time to bring this asset to market. And we went through the whole conversation, you know, multiple rounds of discussion with the potential strategic acquirer, documents drawn up, things like that. And then right at the last minute, or sort of right as we were finishing things up, my co-founder came to me and said, I think this business is worth four times what they're offering. I don't want to sell it. And so we ended up having to walk away from that potential acquisition. And as a founder who, you know, was, and this is a part of the next chapter too, as a founder who was pegging a bit of my identity to the success of this business as a quote, exited founder, that was really hard for me to go through, right? And to realize that we were this close, right, to that exit, and to be able to call myself an exited founder in a venture-backed business. And it just kind of felt like, because I didn't have the right cap table, I hadn't had the right conversations, I hadn't set the right expectations with my co-founder, it was like slipping away.
Yeah, so I feel like the through line here isn't the lack of an exit, it's the clarity that you got from this. And that clarity helped shape the choices you made next. So
absolutely.
This is a company that you are currently building, currently growing. You are the founder and CEO of In Women's Health. And I like to think about this because you're bootstrapping this business. That is kind of the takeaway that you got from the whole cap table debacle. You know, after everything you'd experienced, venture-backed company, M&A, and a real reckoning around power and identity, you clearly made a different choice, and you did it on your own terms. Talk to us a little bit about what In Women's Health is and what you see is missing in the ecosystem today that made you feel like this needed to exist outside of a traditional company.
Absolutely. I mean, I have always been passionate about talent development. My first question whenever I hire someone on their first day, their first meeting with me is, what do you want to be doing in 2, 3, 5, 7 years, and how can I help you get there? And it doesn't have to be at this company, because to me, I've always been passionate about helping people to develop their career and find a career that they are really passionate about. And so In Women's Health is kind of the next iteration, I think, of a lot of the work I did in my 20s and 30s in, you know, starting career organizations and being mentors to people from a career standpoint. You combine that with the fact that at this point I'd been building In Women's Health for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And so I had a pretty broad network. And so oftentimes my founder friends would come to me and say, I need an engineer, I need a chief of staff, who's good, who would you recommend? And at the same time, I was getting people reaching out to me on LinkedIn as a founder in the space saying, I'm in the middle of COVID, I want to leave my current role, I want to go work on something that matters. Or usually, I just had a women's health experience that was terrible, and I'm now fired up and passionate about coming in and fixing this for other women. Can I have 15 minutes of your time to talk about getting a role in the women's health space? So In Women's Health really was another one of those opportunities that was kind of born out of necessity, where there were all of these different parts of the ecosystem that were coming together. And I just said, let me connect the dots. I have always in my career created value out of aggregation. bringing people together, ideas together, content together. And In Women's Health is another example of that. And the other thing I realized is that all of my founder friends were all learning the same lessons, and we were all having to go through the same thing over and over again, right? We were all newbies to building In Women's Health. So we all had to learn how reimbursement works, right? Or how telemedicine laws or regulatory policy worked. And I thought, you know, if we can create a baseline platform or company that is teaching, that's doing the teaching, then every single individual company doesn't have to do the teaching, right? They can just focus on building really amazing women's health companies and leave sort of the teaching that everyone has to have coming into this industry to another place. So that's In Women's Health. Today, we have, again, a newsletter that goes out to over 11,000 people every Monday with more than 100 jobs in the women's health space. We have two robust communities, both a free and a paid version. We have a number of online and in-person education platforms, whether they're day-long, you know, multi-day-long or multi-week-long, bringing people up to speed on the business of women's health.
What I love, and I agree with you, that standardizing the information to make sure everybody has it saves everybody time and money. But the other thing that I hear you say, which I believe deeply, is that when women gather, magical things happen. And I love how you've built this community. So I think the through line for In Women's Health isn't necessarily scale, although it is growing. It's a big community and growing. What I'm hearing you say is it's proximity to the problem and to the people who can solve it. Right?
Absolutely. And then bringing those people together and connecting them. Yeah.
Correct. And that proximity, you know, that sort of put you face to face with the limits of what building alone could change. So that then leads us into chapter 4, right?
Yeah.
Is this notion that money and power equal systemic change. So mm-hmm. through your work within women's health, you started seeing barriers that community building alone couldn't fix. And that's what ultimately pushed you into policy and creating the Women's Pack, the Women's Health Pack. What was the moment that you realized this isn't going to change unless we engage with power directly?
Well, there were two moments, Jill. So the first moment was while I was building In Women's Health, I was always keeping my eye out for what I wanted to build in the women's health space next, right? What did I want to build something in menopause? Did I want to build something in autoimmune? And it just became very, very apparent to me that I was going to hit the same systemic barriers regardless of whatever company I built next. And I said, you know what, I'm going to actually go build a company and work now on systemic change versus working, you know, in a specific disease state related to women's health, because I'm going to beat my head against the wall in the same way, you know, regardless of which one of those disease states I'm working in. So I had an interesting opportunity to go work for another PAC and learned really that this is how the world works. And it was a bit of a light bulb moment for me, kind of a little bit of a naive moment where I think I grew up in America truly believing in my individual vote matters, and it does. But you also need to have the dollars behind it to get the attention, right? And so I think this is where I started realizing that we didn't have a unified voice in Washington. We were not putting dollars behind candidates in a bipartisan way that would be able to support women's health initiatives across the board, from maternal health to menopause to fertility and everything, cardiovascular health and everything in between. So I got together with two amazing co-founders of the Women's Health Pack, and then in the 24 election, we ended up supporting 16 candidates, and 12 of them were elected. And it was really that opportunity for me to see the doors that money opens for you, mm-hmm. the conversations that money opens for you, and the access and the proximity to power that money opens for you too.
Yeah, I mean, lobbying gets a bad rap, but I am a firm believer, particularly because we're in this magical moment of this great wealth transfer. Now, women are creating their own wealth at unprecedented rates. We're also inheriting from our parents and our spouses because we outlive them. Their divorce rate is high. So women are in this moment where we've had more money than ever before. And mm-hmm. guess what? Money is power. Money, hard stop, is power. And so if we open this discussion around helping women use their money in a manner that reflects their values. I so admire what you've built with the Women's Health Pack. It's just really inspiring to see that. You told me a little story about Jody the taxpayer, and I'd love to get that out of you.
Yeah, so it was funny that I think for a long time I was like, oh, I, you know, Jody the taxpayer, someone should pay attention to me because I'm the taxpayer and I pay money in. But it's very different going to Washington as Jody the taxpayer versus Jody the checkbook writer, right? And being able to, I mean, just night and day in terms of the people who are calling, the people who, the rooms people want us in, the conversations that we got that I was getting pulled into versus, you know, when I wasn't coming to the table with a checkbook. And that was, you know, this was really the moment for me that I realized, you know, we're playing Pee Wee football in women's health when everyone else in Washington is playing in the NFL. And we're, you know, we know that of the $558 million that was spent on healthcare lobbying in 2024, we know that only about $2 million of that was spent on things related to women's health. And that's a little bit of an asterisk sort of outside of abortion spending, because that's not something that we talk about or touch with the Women's Health Pack. But it's just, you know, $558 million to $2 million is a pretty wide range.
Okay. This is super off piste, but let's go down this road because, that's a really powerful thing for you to understand, that your checkbook talks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your vote matters, but your checkbook talks. What would you say to other women, or what do you say to other women about utilizing their money, the power of their money? How do you engage them in this conversation? Because I do it in a certain way, but I really love to hear how you I speak to women about the power of their money.
Well, I'm going to tie it all together, Jill. I think, you know, when you have your, when you have a checkbook, when you have money, you can show up in rooms that give you power. It gives you that access. It gives you that influence. And then your decision, hopefully guided by people like you, Jill, is to figure out how do you then align that newfound power or that power that you now have with that checkbook with how you want to move and leave the world. Because, you know, it may be climate, it may be women's health, it may be arts, it may be, you know, there's lots of ways that you can move the world and leave an impact in the world with your power. And I think that's where, you know, again, Jill, people like you are really important to come in and help people not only understand how, you know, actually tactically they can do that, but also help them kind of really dig into what is their value system? Where do they want to use their power? And how do they want to find a place and a home for the power that their money creates?
Okay, you just gave me goosebumps. You're speaking my language. Thank you, Jody. So I think the through line here isn't, you know, the influence of money. It's the responsibility that we as stewards of wealth have to reflect our values in the world. What mark do you want to leave on this earth is the question that I ask my clients.
Exactly. I think that's one of the best questions. And I think, you know, we always ask ourselves in business, what does success look like? I would ask the same question of your listeners, you know, as they're thinking about what impact they want to have on the world, right? What does success look like to you, for your granddaughters, your sisters, your family, your children? And how are you impacting, you know, others, whether they know that it's your money or not? I think that's another question to ask. Because I think there's ways to do it where people know that it's your money and know that it's your power, and there's ways to do it where people don't necessarily know that that's the case.
Okay. So the bridge here between the pack is that understanding that you learned about the responsibility of wealth and the power of wealth, that sets the foundation for what you're building now, right? So you've taken everything you've learned from venture-backed growth to bootstrapping, M&A, independent community building to policy, and you've turned it into your newest venture, which I'm so excited about. It's called 51 And. And it's kind of a platform. I try to describe it to people like the AARP of women's health. Is that accurate? And I'd love you to talk a lot about this.
Yeah, absolutely. It is accurate, except it is for everybody. So sometimes people think, well, that means it's only for people over the age of 50 because the name is 51AN. No, the name is 51AN because women are 51% of the population and we make 80% of the healthcare decisions and healthcare is not political. And we make most of the consumer purchase decisions related to healthcare. And is also inclusive. It's men and women, it's Republicans and Democrats. It's everybody coming together around the shared experience of women's health. So think about it this way, Jill. It's AARP meets Kayak or Waze or NerdWallet. So a little bit of technology and a little bit of political, nonpartisan political power coming together to change the system. So we say that 51AND is an AI-powered navigation layer for women's health that turns a fragmented ecosystem into personalized guidance, real savings, and collective power. So the way I'll stop there, and then we can kind of dive into to how we want to pull it into the conversation.
Yeah, well, I'm really curious about how all those earlier lessons shaped the way you designed this platform.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I have, you know, I probably spent the first 15 years of my career in corporate America with my bosses telling me that you should not be in corporate America. You're actually an entrepreneur at heart. And that's very true. And so as an entrepreneur, I am tasked with, you know, ideally creating recurring revenue, revenue that comes back year after year after year and provides continual value to a consumer. And so my challenge with just the pack, for example, was that was, it's more of a nonprofit model where you're fundraising all the time, right? You're always asking, you always are going into conversations with your handout, asking people to give you money. That doesn't really jive for me with my entrepreneurial background of creating recurring revenue. And so after the 24 election, we learned a couple of different things with the PAC. We learned one, that women want to do more. They want to get involved and they have real needs around navigating their healthcare and understanding everything from their insurance to where to find a provider to, you know, which is the best one of these new menopause companies for me, a true navigation layer. We need to be able to do more than the PAC. So there's certain things from a policy perspective that a PAC can't do. So we needed to open the aperture a little bit in terms of the legality of how we could actually have some influence in Washington. And then we also learned that we need to have this recurring revenue stream because, again, you know, the AI guys and the crypto guys, they're coming to the table with $200 million plus to get the regulations passed that they need to get passed. In women's health, we don't have companies that can donate $5, $10, $15, $20 million to get, you know, overarching systemic level regulations passed in women's health that we need to get to truly move the system. And so, you know what, Joe, we know what we do have. We have 153 million women in this country. And just like you said, we have $31 trillion of capital moving from men to women and into the hands of women, you know, over the course of the next couple of years. So we are well positioned as women to really take our own political power into our own hands and change the system from the right and the left coming together for women. Because you know what? We all experience the same healthcare system. Every woman is going to go through menopause. Lots of women, regardless of where you live or the aisle you live on or the right side of the aisle or left side of the aisle or you know, urban or rural, we're all going to go through shared experiences with healthcare. So this is a way we can come together.
Can you give me some practical description of exactly what 51AND does? Because part of what I want to do here is really provide a platform for you to talk about how fabulous your company is and what it can do, right? So it's the pain points that you've noticed as an entrepreneur that were hurting you that you wanted to try to solve. So talk to me about Jill, the consumer. I have this pain point. Why do I want to be a member or why do I want to be a member of 51AND?
Absolutely. So for $100 a year, you get access to our membership model and our navigation platform. So it's an app on your phone, on your computer, and it helps you with four things. So it helps you save money. So we have more than $1,000 in discounts on women's health products and services. We are rolling out a prescription checker, which will help you check your prescriptions and find the lowest cost for those prescriptions. One of our partners aggregates all of the coupons for all of the pharmaceutical companies. It's over a trillion in coupons that we have aggregated that you have access to. So saving money and time, really important. You know, healthcare, we have a healthcare affordability crisis in the United States. So first and foremost, this will help you solve some of that with those $1,000 of discount. The next thing it'll do is help you navigate your own healthcare. So understanding, you know, you are a 43-year-old woman. These are the screenings that you need to be thinking about this year and next year and the next year. And then we take that and we match that to your insurance. And we say, you know, here's the best way to make sure that you're getting the most out of your insurance this year and getting all these screenings done at the same time. So that's one way we help you navigate. Another way we help you navigate is understanding your hospital bill, right? We're getting ready to roll out our hospital bill checker, and one of our beta testers found $30,000 of errors in her hospital bill. And so we were able to help her write the letter that she needed to write to her hospital system. And that's moving through now the hospital system as we think. So save money, navigate the system. The next thing everybody has trouble with, and another major pain point, is understanding how to navigate advocate for yourself with your doctor. So how do I go in and really truly stand up for the symptoms that I'm feeling? What questions do I need to be asking? How do I take information to my doctor in a way that my doctor can easily consume it and understand it? So understanding how to advocate for yourself. And great story here is we just had one of our medical advisory board members do a monthly talk on cardiovascular health. We always do an action guide after every event that we do. This member printed out that action guide. She took it into her doctor and she said, give me these 5 tests. And the doctor was so impressed. And she said, amazing, great. She said, I wouldn't have ordered these for you, but these are a really good idea. Right. And so because that person was that member was able to take that actionable guide from the content and the event that we hosted for our members, she was able to advocate for herself and move that forward. The other thing a lot of women want to do is they want to get involved and they don't know how. And so, you know, we have over 350 women's health nonprofits in the United States. And a lot of women want to get involved in helping some of these nonprofits move their work forward, but they don't know how to find them. So that's another thing we do is based on your history, your family history, your past history, we recommend to you nonprofits in your area that you may want to get involved in. And then the last thing we do is help you just learn about your body. You know, we do not have an education system in the United States that prioritizes accurate, evidence-based medical education for our general population. In fact, there are only a few states which require any sort of health education to be actually scientifically valid in the United States. And so we really provide that very basic layer of, you know, what do you need to know about hormonal health? What do you need to know about cardiovascular health? What do you need to know about as you get older? What's that fertility 101? And we do it in a way that's personalized to you and surrounded by community and the members that are in your local area.
Oh, Jody, so much good work. And I think when you zoom out of this, your whole experience, you know, the through line here isn't just scale. It's really intention. You've been extremely intentional as you failed forward each time. And it's so exciting to watch you build this. So for our listeners who feel pulled to this story, whether you're an operator or a clinician, an entrepreneur, an executive, or an investor, what's the best way for them to engage with the work that you're doing now?
51and.com. So 51and.com. Join us as a $100 member. We still have a few lifetime memberships available, the next couple of hundred that are there. And so,
I have one. Make sure. I'm really proud.
Yay.
I have one.
You are. Make sure you jump in. Jill, the one thing I also just quickly forgot to add about 51and is the important thing here is what we do with your membership dollars is we pool that capital and then we reinvest that capital back into fixing the ecosystem. So we invest in women's health research, in reimbursement reform, in policy and advocacy, and in building cultural conversations like documentaries and things on TV, shows on TV. So really important, I think, to know that your $100 is not going into someone's pocket. The ecosystem is the largest shareholder of 51and. And so the dollars are going right back into the ecosystem to actually fix the problems that we're all feeling.
Thank you. That is so helpful. Jody, I want to thank you for walking us through the chapters of your life, not just what you built, but what each chapter brought to you and is bringing to us as consumers and women in the world. And I also want to thank you all for listening. If this resonated, please share this episode with somebody who is building their business in the messy middle. It's never a straight line. And share it with other women who need and want to know more about how to put power behind change in women's health. Jodi, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for today's episode of F3, Female Forward Finance. If you found this conversation valuable, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and more importantly, share it with another woman who could benefit. If you'd like to stay updated with insights, resources, and exclusive content, join my mailing list by emailing me at jill.lloyd@ubs.com. Until next time, keep building, keep growing, and let's make those financial dreams a reality. Onward.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.